Okay, I'll be presenting some analysis of media coverage and perception of what the media portrays on violence and injuries. And this study aims to promote cultural changes to prevent violence and injuries in Ciudad Juárez. As Dr. Cerqueira mentioned, is one of the main objectives of the Violence and Injury Prevention Project. So I'm not going to go back and explain the current situation or what the border is, nor define it, what violence means or how we interpret violence here. These are the three main objectives of the study, to observe and document media coverage and violence in Juárez, to explore the social perception of the role of the media and habits and media consumptions by adults and children, to explore the observations that children make in their surroundings in regards to violence. When we say adults, it's mainly the mothers of the children, because they're the ones that mainly stay at home in this Juárez community. Violence in the media is a topic often addressed by communication experts as they attempt to learn about possible effects on behavior. And this study does not attempt to reach any conclusions about the effects of the media. We're only trying to draw attention to the role of the media in preventing the violence and promoting these cultural changes. The results outline observations about the media content and the audiences in Ciudad Juárez. These are the main questions that we're trying to address. How much attention do the media focus on topic on violence? What are some comparisons on the level of violence contained in the different sources of information? What are some perceptions on the impact of the violence on people's life in Juárez and on the role of the media, like if they feel stressed or something? I'm going to show more examples. Could they potentially be connected to media consumption habits? And what violence are children exposed to in their surroundings? And we are going to be exploring four different contexts. The media, being television, at school, in the streets or their neighborhoods, and at home. Also, what violence are children exposed to in... Oh, I'm sorry, I read that. There's limited evidence that shows this. That's why we decided to do this study. In 2009, a local researcher conducted a similar study, and she analyzed the context of the media. Her 2009 study attempted to address the question of how to mitigate the impact caused by the overexposure to violence in the media. She conducted an inventory and assessment of media coverage, concluding that the media coverage has increased specifically on certain channels, and that the coverage was for the most part profuse and sensationalist. However, the definition of sensationalist is not very clear in her study or overall. It is also unclear what counting how many stories on violence were present in 2009 versus 2006 in her study. So perhaps that there was an increase in the violence in the city, which we already know. In the first phase or objective of this study, we use descriptive qualitative methodology. We use observation to follow and document all the media coverage for 3 weeks. And a description of this coverage was attempted at carefully coding and classifying the information contained therein. We carefully used the definition of peace journalism as a guide in developing the indices used in an attempt to make the classification of media coverage as objective as possible. So there's a different idea of what media peace journalism and war journalism is, so I'm going to kind of tell you a little bit of those differences, how they see it in developing this concept. War journalism is, there's a preference for violence, again, sensationalist, and the urge to shock. They appeal to emotions, especially fear. They focus on the visible results of violence, like damage and victims, while ignoring the complex and the invisible, like origins, context, trauma, or damage to the culture. And they are reactive, waiting for violence to manifest itself, and rarely proactive. So there is a relative low value on use of peace-related stories and topics. Versus peace journalism, which explores conflict and issues and does not focus on the loss. It humanizes the people on all sides. It gives a voice to the voiceless and is proactive. So those are some of the ones that we were trying to focus on. and applying it to the situation in Juarez. These are the media that we were following and analyzing, the three most frequently read or well-known newspapers from Juarez, El Diario de Juarez, Periódico PM, which is from the same owner, but they have different ways of covering the news, El Norte, and from TV, we cover Channel 44 and Channel 2 or 32, their evening edition, when they tend to do more of their coverage on violence and what's going on in Ciudad Juarez. And we did this from September 10, 2012 to September the 28th. And the media outlets we follow, we recorded the headline and the main image each day for these different sources. And this is the classification we use for the topics and the image to code it from 1 being neutral in the images to 5 being bloody. And then the topics they cover, 1 being neutral, not having to do anything with violence, and 5 being dead because of the violent situation. And again, this is mainly from the front page of the different, either the newscast, the headline story, or the papers. The summary of the findings, an objective level of violence is present in the content of the headline and front page images. The percent of news revolving is around violence most of the time. An inventory of the different of teams included in this coverage, I'm going to present that to you what were the main, usually it's murder, but I'm going to show you a detail of the coverage. And I count on how many times certain representations appear in the images of the newspaper. So here you can see the percentage of violence in the front pages and headlines. Again, like I mentioned before, we were interested in seeing how violence is covering the media, and no interest in making judgment calls about whether the coverage was adequate, sensationalist, or unethical. But in order to organize the information observed in the newspapers, we label the content as either violent or not violent. And this chart that you're seeing right now describes the number of headlines both in the front page and in the city news sections in size that revolves around violence. And that violence also encompasses violent crimes, including murder, assault, theft, kidnapping, extortion, abuse, or rape. Also, counted as crimes we use related to illegal arms and drugs. And the stories that we did not count as violence, those were accidents. Here you can see some of the cover pages of the newspapers. El Diario is the one that is the most widely circulated newspaper in the city. It features of the front page include a main headline, multiple images, and other smaller headlines, as you can see on the first image. Our observation concluded that the main headlines do not usually revolve around violence. However, the front page usually has a top section dedicated to the stories related to violence. These headlines sometimes do pictures fairly visible because of their location on the top of the page. And 16 of the 18 papers where we saw dedicated this section to stories of violence. El Norte is another daily morning newspaper. On the front page, their section is dedicated to either national or international headlines and images. It often features international news and less violent images. And we can see the last one, the PM. You can see the big red letters there. It does not tend to report stories on any city issues, politics, or other type of current events, but it focuses on printing instead only stories on the crime, violence, and accidents of the day that it's going on. Moreover, we can see in this graphic the headline feature in El Norte, that most of the time, it's the orange line at the bottom, they avoided a violent team in all but one case during our observation time frame. In contrast to the PM newspaper, they feature stories about violent deaths in just only two of their editions, and they were related to international news and not to the local context. So they do tend to avoid those images from the local stories. In this one, we can see other images on the front page again. They were avoiding the violence in the Norte newspaper. So altogether, an average of the front page headlines about violence, the PM, 77% of the time it was bloody images and violent and about violence. The Diario, 34% of the time, and Norte, 20% of the time. In their city section, again, Diario was covering lower violence and bloody images than the other newspapers. And then here you can see the topics in the newspapers, and then you can see the highest one, and all of them is murder, and then followed by theft. And road accidents is also high in there. Images in the newspaper, again, the PM was the highest, showing dead bodies, injured person, blood. And you can see in the city section or the front page, they had higher numbers than the other two newspapers. Topics in television newscasts, again, murder was at the top on both television stations. Images in television newscasts, they tend to show a lot of weapons and police officers and action and arrested suspects more than the actual injured person or violent or blood. Then the objective two of the study was to do a self-evaluation survey with questions that reflected the true level of possible effect, those in perceptive, cognitive, and behavioral on the adults. This was the survey that they answered. And most of the people, whether they read the newspapers or watch the news stories, they show that they do feel stressed about the current situation, whether in their neighborhoods or in the television. This is their perception about the media. Most of them feel that the media doesn't say the truth, that they exaggerate the situation, and they are too graphic and aggressive. So that most of the people do feel that the media is overdoing it. In the objective three, we used an adapted version of Oreo and COVID questionnaire to measure exposure to violence in childhood and adolescence, again, in three and four settings, at their home, school, on the street, and television. The media, 58% of the children are watching news on television at least fairly often. It's not frequently. At home, 10% of the children have been either threatened or been bitten. And then 39% have seen a weapon on the street or in their neighborhood, while 40% reported to have seen a person who has been injured in an act of violence. These are some perception of 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds in Juarez. How they also see their surroundings. This was done by the community health workers that were asking them to draw how they feel. And those are some of the community health workers that Dr. Zakira mentioned had been trained on mental health. And you can see like a broken heart, a kidnapping, and a teen pregnancy, and how they see their homes and surroundings. Another one did a story on a kidnapper, how they see it, and the stories that they hear in their families also. So we were able to observe the coverage and the content the media produced and the level of violence in their images. We were able to observe only the differences in perception and perhaps self-outlook of those adults and children exposed or not exposed to violence in the media or their surroundings, but we were not able to observe whether or not there is any influence or changes in any of their behaviors. Addressing, going back to the first questions that we proposed to answer, the first one, there is a high violent average, more than 50% of their content in the media. Some media, it is more discreet than other. Most of participants, adult children, feel stressed whether they watch or read the media or not. The implication of this finding should be considered for further study. And it is higher, the violence the children perceive in their surroundings than the one in the media. And that in the media is not from the news, but from other TV programming or movies most of the time. I would like to acknowledge other people who participated in this study. Jessica Macias is a PAHO independent contractor. Media. She also collaborated in the media classification and data collection. Was a UTEP student, Eva Lopez, who volunteered at PAHO. And others involved in helping us get to those children and community health workers and understanding the environment, Claudia Solomon, Monica Chavira, and Raul Soto. And this is one of the pictures of the same kids that they're already working on, and instead of portraying those negative images, trying to be more, have a voice and giving their own messages. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a fascinating presentation on how the media patterns, on how they may be influencing people. You're setting yourself up nicely to come back and tell us next year what you found as a result of these different exposures. Maybe we have about 10 minutes for questions, answers, comments. I wonder if Maria Teresa, we don't quite have enough room for everyone, but the presenters come back up. We've had quite a feast of presentations on thinking, on immunization, on TB, HIV, syphilis, and mental health issues, violence and injuries, environmental health, and media and communications coverage. So, over to you. Please just very quickly say who you are and what your question or comment is. Keep. So, one, two.
Hi, I'm Deborah Keller for the Texas Oklahoma Aid Education Bank. I'm in El Paso. And my question is for Dr. Ford. Oh, hi. Yes, I was interested when you said let the border be the border, so that the decisions are made by those on the border. And can you give an example of the type of agency that you would see as the sideline agency to help the ICANN? And then clarify also what you mean, facilitate support in terms of being on the sideline.
Sure. Currently, the border has from the environmental health perspective, has two binational health commissions, so they're border commissions. One is the binational health commission, the border commission, and the other one is the environment commission. So we have infrastructure, the institutions that they really have to talk to each other only for border issues, and they build their own agenda. My theory is an autonomous agenda that they need to build. They're based on different mechanisms. They have the two commissions, they really operate in a very different manner, but they deal only with border issues. The problem in environmental health, they don't talk to each other. They never talk to each other. And what you are saying, this is the first time that really we could facilitate at least a meeting that the Border Environment Commission went to the Border Health Commission and had a meeting to really start to talk to each other how they're going to deal with environmental health issues. So one way to facilitate is, one, the two commissions that really need to talk to each other, environmental health issues. That's a no-brainer anyway. That's really what they need to do. Especially because the Health Commission, they do not want to include the environmental component, and the Environment Commission, they really need that to move forward. I think the national agencies, they also the role to facilitate these national processes so that they can do it in a different way, like as an international organization. We facilitate the dialogue, but the national agencies, they really need to push that agenda forward. But they are not going to do it themselves. What we've seen from history is that, yes, they're interested, but we push them to shove and comes along the border. You know, it's not that strong if you have a border commission that that's their mandate to deal with. So that's really what we mean.
Thank you.
I'm Maggie Santibanez from the California Office of National Border Health. And my question is for the vaccination presentation. And I would like to know what is the role of the promotora in the vaccination program. It's only outreach and education, or they have a more active role?
Well, it depends on how the state manages the promotora's issue. For example, in Texas, they have a complete set of training and education and information issue, not only for active search of people who need vaccination, but to educate the community in order to empower them in the health issue, not only vaccination, but in other like chronic diseases, etc. In other parts of, in the Mexican side of the border, in contrary, they have a very stronger role. They work together with the Secretary of Health, called the Jurisdicciones Sanitarias, and they are all like health personnel over there, and working together with the healthcare personnel of the secretary, and taking part in the process of vaccination.
Doctor, would you say that the promotora de salud would be a cross between a health educator and a medical assistant at the rural setting?
Yes, well, Texas A&M, for example, has a program that they train the...
On the Mexican side.
Oh, in the Mexican side, yes, yes. Also, they are part of the health personnel over there. Yes.
My name is Antonio Nere. Sorry, I work at CDC Cancer Division. And I was wondering if you have any anticipated changes or the upcoming administration changes to Mexico in regard to border.
Well, that's kind of hard to tell at this moment. We expect major changes, obviously, whole party shifting, but it's hard to say how that will influence border health. There are two issues here. One are the states on the border. They're stable. There's no changes in them at this time. So we expect some stability there, but the Mexican section of the U.S.-Mexico Health Commission will obviously have changes there. Some of the personnel are more on the federal side, some of them are designated on the state level. So there'll be some changes, but there'll be some stability.
What doesn't change is a lot of the problems that that they're coming into. Those are so big and so intractable. They have to be priorities for whichever administration. Any other questions or comments on this session that's looked at the border? If not, well, so this is your last chance. If not, thank you very much.